following is for information purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. All opinions and views expressed by the contributors to this podcast are in a personal capacity only. They do not represent the views of Progressive Equity Research or any other organization mentioned in this podcast.
Money never sleeps, pal.
Great. It is Thursday, the 18th of April, and I'm delighted to say that as well as Jeremy McEwen, our regular commentator, we've also got a friend of the show, Scott Evans, who's been here once before and talked us through some of the work that he's been doing on the Deutsche Numis small cap indices. And Scott, great to have you back on the show. And I understand you've got some comments for us about Q1 from a sort of a global and a UK perspective.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me back. Yes, I thought what I would do, I thought it might be of use and of interest to listeners, if I start really with just a quick wrap of Q1, because obviously we just started into Q2, look at things sort of globally, then focus a bit more on the UK, and then, you know, we may do something really dangerous and even look at some predictions for the year.
My goodness.
That's okay. You know, we often say that, you know, the past is no guide to the future. And it's on every sort of legal financial thing I ever see. I take a quite a different view, actually. I say, which is not really surprising given the work that I do at London Business School and the work with Deutsche Numis Indices, which is entirely backward looking. So for me, unlike that infamous Italian driver in the Gumball Rally, I'm showing my age. I think that was released in 76. Before starting the race, rips off his rearview mirror and states, "What's behind does not matter." I was going to do that in an Italian accent, but I didn't want to insult our Italian listeners.
Probably best. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So for me, it's important to know where we've come from before getting the crystal ball out and trying to look through the mists into the future. So starting at the more violent end of the market, the bond market, and that's the one that Liz Truss tried to blow up. This really has been a very, very interesting period for the bond market in Q1. Very much went into reverse. It became very obvious that the inflation dragon had not been tamed. Central banks, particularly the US Fed, was in no hurry to cut rates. Neither was the Bank of England. As well, bond yields in the US and the UK, where inflation remains sticky, come down a long way, obviously, but remains sticky. Bond yields really reversed, and we started a strong increase over the quarter. Now, why am I bringing it up? Why is it important? You've had bond yields going right back up again. The consensus is, yes, rates are coming down, but they're going to take longer to come down. Now, for the equity market, which generally deals with inflation a bit better than bonds, the background, especially in the US, remained relatively positive. You know, inflation is going to be higher for longer, rates going to be higher for longer, but US equities took this very much in their stride. And we saw, you know, we had a stunning performance from US equities in 2023. Q1, that continued. Now, it wasn't so magnificent for the Magnificent Seven, not all seven of them anywhere. We've seen a couple die on the way. But nonetheless, the S&P, I think it's worth putting this in perspective, still managed a 10% return over the quarter, which is a pretty good return for any quarter, especially given what was going on around the world. And so the World Equity Index, which if you're sitting in the UK, you may not, you know, consider, you know, this may not be something that you're aware of, but the World Equity Index is up very, very strongly. It's very, very US orientated. And against that, the UK was looking a little bit lackluster, but still managed a positive performance over the first quarter. Oil market, we saw at the beginning of the quarter, we were around about $73 for Brent, and then up. That went up to about $90. Really, really, very, very strong performance in the oil market. And I think there's going to be some important reasons why to highlight this. And something myself and Jeremy often discuss when we're sitting in the Prince Regent on Marylebone High Street, and you're very welcome to join us whenever on this, is that, you know, what is in the price of oil? Is this, you know, can we basically say this is a supply and demand issue? No, not at all. You know, production remains fine. There's a strong political premium within the price, and we've seen that reverse slightly in the last couple of weeks. But I think the only reason I'm highlighting that is because it has such a big impact, especially in terms of its feed through into cost inputs, into prices, inflation, and ultimately where the direction of rates are going to be going. then if we're going to, if I'm going to make any prediction now, this spoiler alert prediction coming, I think oil price, whilst we still, the geopolitical stage situation as it remains as it is, I think it's very likely, even though we've seen a bit of weakness recently, oil to remain at a pretty high price. Okay, and the last section is precious metals, and that's gold. I think that's been the showstopper in Q1. And for all those people who didn't really consider gold to be an asset and considered it one of the weird investments for people like myself, everybody was talking about gold. It just ended up being, it went from being for the weirdos to the mainstream.
It has become mainstream, hasn't it? Definitely, yeah.
Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, prices rising from $2,000 an ounce up to going over $2,400 an ounce over the quarter. Now, why have I brought this up? Interestingly, and it's something, again, I've discussed a lot of this over the last few weeks. This has happened against the backdrop of rising bond yields, typically a bad environment for gold prices. Whereas some people say, and I've seen this written a lot, and it really annoys me, I'm annoyed from Bledler Ridge here, is that gold is a good inflation hedge. Actually, it's not. It's just been shown over time to be an okay inflation hedge. And most of the time, when bond yields and gold prices, they tend to go in opposite directions. So it begs the question, you know, why has gold been so strong? And more importantly, is this going to continue? So again, another prediction coming. Well, what's been happening? Is it been demand and supply? Is there a shortage of gold? Actually, I think the consensus has come round to the view that this has been very much driven by China. And I don't mean Chinese retail buying. This is Chinese central banks purchasing large scale gold. And I think it brings the question up, and I think this is very important, especially when it comes to the fiction section of the dollar, is that what does this mean for the dollar? The Chinese are quite clearly signaling that they want to decouple. They want to be out of having reserve assets in dollars and reserve assets in dollar assets, and something that can replace that is gold. Now, we can debate that forever. But so that's what we've had. We've had, you know, it's been a very, very interesting market, both in bonds had a trickle time, equities done pretty well, and we had the real showstopper of gold and oil. And then, of course, what was the real star was Bitcoin. I really don't know what drives Bitcoin, something Jeremy knows a lot more about than I do. And currency, I think the only thing we'd just say is dollar's been strong. Is that going to continue? Well, probably yes for the time being. So that's the background there.
I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you on the gold point. I think the conventional commentators have been trying to wrestle with this one for most of the last 3 or 4 weeks or longer, in fact, as what is driving this gold price. And I think it is, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's China buying it and the rest of the world basically selling it, but China is buying it centrally and it's buying it through the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which is trading consistently at a premium to the rest of the world. And it's being stacked away in gold bullion in preparation for something that China is up to. And my conclusion is that there's one of two things they're doing, and possibly both. One is a de facto devaluation of their currency, renminbi, yuan, whatever it's called. Hugh Hendry calls it red cabbage. And so that's maybe we should just call it the red cabbage. But it's either the devaluation of the red cabbage or it is ahead of some form of military campaign. And that obviously brings us back to the politics and the geopolitics. But before we go down that rabbit hole, tell us what you've got to say about the UK.
It's fair to say that UK equities have been, let's say, lackluster. That has been both in terms of absolute and relative performance. Relatively, we've seen actually the US has come off quite a bit recently, but nonetheless, the UK market hasn't been doing great. Large caps, as measured by the Deutsche Numis Large Cap Index, which accounts for 80% of the UK equity market, up until last night, was only up 1.5% since the beginning of the year. That's in capital gain terms. In total returns, you get the princely sum of 3%. Not great, not a disaster. It's around about just under 6% for the S&P 500. And actually, the Eurostox has done even better at just under 7%. But so UK large caps, not great, but not a terrible. Small caps, unfortunately, if we look at the Deutsche Numis Smaller Companies Index, that's made a capital loss up until last night of just over 2%. It looks a little bit better when you add back in dividends. You get about 1.5%. Mid-caps done worse, 2.5% down since the beginning of the year. So very dull for large caps, a poor start for smaller mid-caps. But let's make this very clear. We've had much worse quarters in the past, and we had a very, very difficult period last year. So I think we've got to be very careful about, yeah, we've had a dull start, hasn't done well. It's not all doom and gloom at this stage. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. So I've noticed there's a lot of stuff in the press at the moment saying the small cap premium is over. It's all dead. It's all going to hell in a handbasket investing in small caps. There's been about three articles in the FT over the last couple of weeks basically saying this. So let's take a step back. What's really been going on in the UK in terms of small cap performance? Now, the obvious answer is the smaller companies are underperforming, doing particularly badly or doing not particularly badly, but not doing so well in the UK. Very economically sensitive, more impacted by input prices. Domestic demand remains weak. It's all the usual suspects in terms of the macro drivers. But also, is there a large cap, small cap issue going on here? I'm certainly not saying it's the death of small caps or the death of the small cap premium at this stage. So just a quick summary in terms of the performance there. You know, you've had UK equities been a bit lackluster in absolute terms relative to other markets. You had UK, within UK equities, large caps have been the ones outperforming relative to small and mid caps. Something written on this is about, well, what's happened in the rest of the world? Have small caps underperformed elsewhere? Well, we saw in the first quarter of the year in the US, where you had a very, very strong performance from the S&P, you had a decent performance from UK US small caps, but they actually performed about 50% less well than large caps. So you've got small caps in the UK underperforming relative to large caps. And you also have the same thing in the US, even though you had a much, much stronger market and a much stronger economy. So in some respects, that could answer the question in a roundabout way. There has been, we've seen in the US, the concentration of the markets increase. It's been the Magnificent Seven, now the Magnificent Four, but that's really been driving. And we know in the UK, and something which we talked a lot about at the beginning of the year, was the concentration. The UK is one of the most concentrated major markets on the planet. And that certainly doesn't help when it comes to small cap investing. One thing which is people become very obsessed about is, and something I'm quite obsessed about, is the births and deaths register in the UK, especially within the small cap market. And as you remember, at the end of last year when we did all of the analysis, we showed that in terms of the IPO market, it was one of the worst years on record. I think it was 26 IPOs over the year, 25, 26, something like that, which was the second worst that in our numbers. I think the last time it was worse than that was 2009 after the global financial crisis. And everybody was sitting, please, 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 we need some more IPOs because the market is getting more concentrated and the number of companies is going down. Well, I've dug around and I think there's been three IPOs this year so far in Q1, which doesn't bode well because I believe in terms of the death register, there's about 20 which have been delisted so far. And there's probably around about 10 or 15 suspended, ready for delisting. So at this stage, we haven't had the barrage of IPOs that we were hoping for, and the decline in the number of listings and the concentration of the UK market has continued. But let's take stock. Valuation, I'm sort of contradicting myself here a bit. Valuation in UK equities, not so much small cap, large cap, valuation of UK equities does look good for the UK compared to, say, the US. The UK trades on, I think, half the rating of the US equities. So UK equities as a whole look pretty good value. Hard to really just to say how that is small cap versus large cap, something I'm looking at the moment. Also, I think we ought to remind ourselves, especially the doomsters who are talking about the end of the small cap premium and it's all over. We've had this many times in the past. We've had sustained periods of underperformance. And funny enough, when we launched the Smaller Companies Index back in the midst of time at Hawker Vare, and we launched it because there'd been this stunning outperformance of small caps in the US. We then had 15 years of small cap underperformance. So it took quite a long time for that to reverse. So
it's all in the timing.
All in the timing. There's fewer companies to invest in, but there's still some very good ones. There's still some very lowly valued and decent companies and it's a hunting ground for value investors. It's not a go-go growth market, but I don't think it ever has been. And, you know, I think if you were looking into your UK equities, I think now is actually not a bad time.
Yeah, no, that all sounds very fair. And I think there have been many articles written about the the steady demise of the UK markets and, yeah, the gradual loss of numbers of quoted companies. But I'm still a firm believer that a bit of positive sentiment, a bit of good news and a bit of confidence in the markets can recover very quickly. And you're right, we haven't seen the hoped for rebirth or reopening of the IPO market in Q1, but I am certainly hearing anecdotal evidence or stories of IPOs queuing up, hopefully, for Q2 and Q3. How many of those come through in reality obviously remains to be seen, but I think there are a lot of hopeful people out there, and with a bit of luck and following wind, we might start to see some of that showing through. So, Scott, thank you very much for that. Great roundup. Jeremy, did you want to give us a bit of a perspective on the macro environment as you're seeing it?
I mean, we began this week thinking that World War III had begun last weekend. And I think to Scott's point on the political nature of the oil price, we kicked off the week, the oil prices fell, and it's gone down further as the week progressed. And the dollar has remained strong, but hasn't strengthened on the back of what was reported in the press and is still being reported in the press as a major escalation of the Middle East crisis. Now, don't want to belittle the situation, and what we have witnessed for the first time ever is a direct engagement between Iran and Israel. And it's the first time we see the US come to Israel's military assistant directly. Both sides have learned from the encounter, but we've had a situation where Biden has told the Israelis to take the win. And Iran has said this concludes it as far as they're concerned. Both sides, as they say, have left the party with a balloon. So for now, at least, and again, you can't trivialize these things and mistakes can happen. It is contained. It has not become a major regional conflict, particularly when you bear in mind there were Arab nations that help in the defense of Israel in all this. This is not the start of World War III. It is a worry, but you just got to look at the reaction to the in terms of the oil price and the dollar to see that financial markets aren't unduly concerned by this. I think the big news in the UK this week was the headline inflation number falling more slowly than expected, declining to 3.2% in March versus the consensus of 3.1%. You know, most analysts are saying the rate of change in the UK, and Governor Bale is in Washington at the moment, almost crowing in front of the Americans, saying he's going to have lower inflation than they are. Just watch and wait. I think he might be talking the talk, but I'm still doubtful he will walk the walk and cut rates ahead of the Fed. I remain sceptical that the EU or the Bank of England, the ECB or the Bank of England, have the balls, frankly, to go against the almighty dollar and cut rates ahead of the Fed. I hope I'm wrong. And I think if they do, as I think I've said before, that's very good news for the UK, although one has to be mindful of what the impact on the currency. What about sort of company news in the UK this week, Gareth?
Yeah. So as you say, I mean, it's been a pretty busy week. We've had two more stocks with takeover approaches, IDS, the Royal Mail business, and also Hipgnosis Songs, which between them account for £4 billion of market value, which would be capital being made available for investment elsewhere in the steadily decreasing number of other stocks which might remain. We've also had a couple of other smaller departures, probably the most notable being Superdry, which left under very different circumstances and what seems to be becoming almost a theme, actually, of announcing an emergency or rescue fundraising and delisting at the same time, which is almost of leaving the market in a particularly sort of loud and disappointing way in many respects. I think it's a sad end to what could have been a really good story. But yeah, another couple of departures there. In terms of trading news, there's been an awful lot of results and trading updates over the last week. Most of those have been generally in line, some of them slightly ahead, some slightly behind, as you'd expect. But overall, not too severe in either direction. Nothing massive to write home about. We had one of our progressive stocks, Severfield, reported that trading was going pretty well. Order book in particular was very strong for them. And they are one of those businesses which has been engaging in a share buyback, which I think has been well received. And I think that's probably been a noticeable theme of the first quarter. A number of companies are saying, actually, well, if other investors aren't going to buy our shares, we think they're good value, or we can't see any better use of capital within our business, so we'll be buying those shares back. Thank you very much. And I think those share buybacks, I think by and large, are being very well received by investors. So that's something which I'd probably expect to see more of if we don't start to see the market performing better. So yeah, I think from a UK company perspective, it's been another week of good and bad reasons for companies leaving the market. But overall, company trading news has probably been largely in line with expectations, which is probably, you'd probably take that given where we've been over the last few months, and probably is roughly in line with the slightly disappointing performance of those stocks across Q1, but hopefully looking forward to a bit better from the rest of the year. What have we got coming up next week from the macro side, Jeremy? Anything exciting on the horizon?
It's a bit of a quiet week. We've got US GDP data on Thursday, where the expectation is for a slowing down of the sort of runaway rate of 3.4% reported last month, slowing to 2.8%. And probably the big one is Friday, we get US PCE inflation data for March. PCE core inflation is supposedly Jay Powell's favoured inflation measure. So there'll be a lot of talking heads discussing what this will mean for the future path of US interest rates. The expectation is for 2.7 year on year versus 2.8 in February, which feels quite sticky to me. So I think it's going to be further headlines probably of higher for longer. Friday also, interestingly, sees the policy rate decision from the Bank of Japan. Last month, it increased its rates for the first time, or its guidance for the first time since 2016, taking it from negative 0.1% to zero. So they're still operating in a different but parallel universe to the rest of the world. And questions remain, will it try and normalize and join the rest of the G7 with positive rates? And if so, what are the repercussions? And that's a whole 1 hour episode, I think, to discuss in itself. So
yeah, let's not go there now. That's a whole conversation, no, but very, very important. So yeah, interesting to see what the Japanese do, but also that US inflation number, especially in a world where certainly it feels like Europe and the UK are probably looking to the US for the lead on interest rates. It would be good to see that coming down a bit more, but we'll see what happens. So great. Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. Thank you, Scott, for joining us again. Great to get your perspective, as ever, on both the indices and broader, more broadly in terms of some of those commodities and prices. And Jeremy, thank you very much, and look forward to catching up again next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Brought to you by Progressive Equity.
This is your wake-up call, pal. Go to work.